call the meeting to order. Thanks for your patience. We went a little long. Can you get a roll call?
Supervisor French.
Here.
Supervisor McPherson.
Here.
Councilmember Matthews.
Here.
Councilmember Reed.
Here.
Councilmember Termini.
Here.
Councilmember Terrazas.
Here.
Citizen Campbell. Citizen Dexter. Citizen Mosier.
Here.
We have a quorum. But the next item on the agenda is approval of the agenda for today, November 10th. Are there any additions or deletions? Can I get a motion?
So moved.
Okay, motion by Councilmember Matthews, second by Mayor Reed. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Passes unanimously.
By those present.
By those present. Next item on the agenda is oral communications. Is there any member of the public that would like to speak to any item that's not on today's agenda? Sir, please, you have 3 minutes.
Thanks. I'm Bruce Holloway from Boulder Creek, and I've been looking into a conflict of interest situation, and I've got some packets that one for each of the board members here present. When I first started looking into this, I was hearing nobody knew about it, and now I'm hearing everybody knows about it, and I'm not sure what you know because I haven't seen anything in the packet, so I'm passing out my own packet, so at least I know what all the board members know. Board member Termini has a company, and this company has been doing business with the library for the last year, and that's a conflict of interest under the law, as far as I can see. So one thing I think is that all the board members need to understand about Section 1090 of the Government Code. I think you can get whatever advice you need, but each board member needs to come to some sort of understanding about what this section means on their own. This thing I handed out talks about forfeiture. Substantial forfeiture is one of the penalties. There's a couple of cases here that are referred to. If you read those cases, then you find out that it doesn't matter if there was an intermediary. If the city of Santa Cruz had served as an intermediary between the contractor and the library, it wouldn't make any difference. And it also doesn't matter if it's indirect. If someone else authorized it and didn't come to the board, it's still a conflict of interest because the board has jurisdiction. So unfortunately, I think that board member Termini is going to have to pay back the money and resign from the library board. And I'm sorry to say that, I like Mike. And I think he's the smartest guy on the board. I had a long talk with him this afternoon. Honestly, I think he can serve the public just as well from the peanut gallery, like those of us who, others of us who care about the library. John Barisoni knew about this a year ago. And so it's really a breach of his duty to the library board that he shielded the city employees who were involved with this and kept the library board in the dark. That's a conflict of interest on his part, and he needs to resign just as much. And I think this shows that the existing joint powers agreement with, that talks about governance.
Sir, you almost done? You can go a little further if you want to wrap up.
I think it just shows that this joint powers agreement needs to change. It can't continue the way it is with the city providing this particular law firm to the library. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other member of the public who would like to speak to an item that's not on today's agenda? Seeing none, we'll go to the next item, which is a presentation, Minecraft World of Humanities from Lynn.
Hi. Hey, everybody. I'm Lynn Stansomero. I'm the IT manager for the libraries. And we're going to watch a short video, and then Janice and I are going to do a little talking about what we've got going on concerning Minecraft. And then that's not a dead body in the box. That's one of our yes, mobile 3D learning labs that we're going to try to do. So.
Minecraft is a video game that has a lot to offer. At its core, it's very open-ended. If you want to have an adventure, you can have an adventure. If you want to build something, you can build something. If you want to talk to to your friends, you can talk to your friends. If you want to kill monsters, you can kill monsters. So the game appeals to a lot of people. It makes a lot of sense to take a game that is already fun, that is proven to be enjoyable to kids, and try to find a way to bring it into the classroom.
So you'll hear Minecraft, EDU, Monster.
As well as many others, have been struggling with the issue of how to teach digital citizenship, which is internet ethics, online safety, privacy, research. I mean, it's everything. Because as our kids were getting into middle school and high school, we had a lot of, you know, frankly, ugly incidents happen. And so, you know, the school's administration, along with the computer department, decided we really need to start teaching these concepts earlier. You know, we're going to treat the game world as part of the classroom. It is a classroom. It's just in the digital space. And almost every single kid finally kind of came around and sort of and got it.
Go ahead and let's start off by getting in, following the instructions that are up onto the board. Okay, you are students. Pick your avatar.
Pixel Pushers, as a student project here at ETC, is working with Minecraft EDU to develop a series of software features for their software. So our programmers have been working on a quiz block and a lesson review tool to include in the Minecraft EDU software, while we're also working on researching, you know, how and what you can best teach with Minecraft. You can really teach a wide array of things that aren't immediately obvious.
The kids have to think it's fun. Otherwise, what's the point? There's plenty of educational games out there, and frankly, very, very few of them have ever been very satisfying for me. I never wanted to use them in my classroom, because it smells like school.
Make sure you're using the right material. Make sure you're not using gravel for the parts that are in between the pillars there, because the gravel will fall. Let's check out group two. Oh, nice. You finished. You're almost done with one of the hardest shapes. Good job.
In our research, we started out asking, what can Minecraft teach? As we actually started playtesting with students, we found that that might be the wrong question, and that it's more interesting to ask, how can Minecraft teach?
The virtual world of Minecraft, I think, is fun and powerful, you know, for these kids. And I think they get it in a way that I think some of their teachers don't sometimes.
I think the most important thing for someone coming to Minecraft from an educational perspective is to just play the game. Get a feel for how the game works, and then perhaps even more importantly, let the students play the game.
You have to think about where 21st century kids are living. I mean, they come here in school, but they're texting each other on the way home, and then they're on Facebook, and then they're playing games together. It's all a continuum. They don't separate the conversations that they have typed into Minecraft with the ones that they have in the lunchroom. There's such excitement around this game. Getting that excitement into schools all over the world. The more voices we have coming up with ideas and creating content and sharing content, the better.
Thanks for watching that. So basically, Janice and I and the programming team, we decided to start a mobile 3D learning lab for Minecraft, where we can augment things that teachers are teaching kids in the classroom. We can also do programs in the libraries. So this is basically like a little roadie box, and it'll have 10 laptops in it, and a Minecraft server, which is just a little tiny cube server that serves up its own wireless SSID. Kids can't get on the internet on the laptops. They can only connect to the Minecraft server, and the laptops have the client loaded on them. So the idea is that the programming team will, you know, schedule things at schools, here in different libraries, at Boys and Girls Clubs, so it can go anywhere. And the kids can open up a laptop, get on the server, and play with each other. And then we also have a teacher's laptop, which kind of controls the environment and controls what the kids are doing in the environment. And so with Minecraft EDU, unlike the normal version of Minecraft, you can actually learn a lot. Kids can learn a lot. They can learn how to program. Like, they'll have, like, a sheep, and they have to program the sheep to eat the grass, and they have to learn commands and programming language to do that. So we're proposing that we do two servers. One is what they call a creative play server, where the kids just go in and build stuff and break stuff and learn, you know, some basic building skills. And you learn a lot about science because you know you have to have concrete, not gravel. And, you know, it's just kind of this progression of skills as the kids go through. And then the other server that we're going to have is what they call the World of Humanities. It's really exciting. And so we can pop the kids into any world that we want them to learn about. Ancient Greece, Mesopotamia, ancient China. And the kids actually go on quests. And they have to meet, you know, chairman, you know, the emperor in China, and get information from the emperor to go to the next level. And they have to build things. They have to learn things. It's also, they take quizzes. They have to write what they've learned about. So it kind of encompasses learning on a whole different level. I don't know if Janice wants to...
Yeah, what they do in the humanities section is they put the students in the situation. So if you were in ancient China and a certain situation was happening, what would you do? What are the things you have to think about to make that kind of decision? It puts you right into the world. So you're learning history in a real kind of way. It's amazing. Over to show it to me, and all of a sudden you just feel like you're right in there and you're having to make the decisions you need to make. And we chose to come up with a mobile idea because we didn't want to put it just in one branch. We wanted it to be able to travel. We wanted it to be able to travel to parts of the county where maybe there are students who are not going to have this opportunity to have Minecraft at home. There are students that do and have it and can use it either in school or at home, but we wanted to make sure that the other kids could keep up. And so the idea that we had is that it move around, not only in the public libraries, but in any place where students might gather.
So we have, this is our little, we have three little beta testers who are testing all this stuff for me. And this was, I said to my main beta tester, Aiden, he couldn't be here tonight because he got sick, but he really wanted to come, what he would want in a really cool Minecraft server. And he came up with a list of stuff. As you can see, it's pretty cute. He's 6 years old. I'd like to know where he would play or something. Train station should go to a castle. That's awesome. You know, so, you know, and then he named the two servers for us. So the World of Humanities server is called the Bookworm, and the other Creative Play server is called the Minecrafter's Dream. So we're I partnered with Maker's Factory over here, and we bought the servers from them, and we've got training from them, using one of our part-time aides who comes into Lit 5 hours a week and works on this project with us. His name is Patrick Landis, and he is our server administrator. And then, of course, my three beta testers who are trying to break it as much as they can. So we just have one quick more video, and then we'll be done. And this kind of gives you the perspective of what the kid is experiencing when they play Minecraft.
Thank you.
really love, these presentations are great, all the things that you're doing for youth in the community.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, and I think, I know we've talked about this before, but I think this would be something that you'd want to publicize a little bit more. Just this alone is, you know, great, bringing it out to the community.
It hasn't started yet.
When you do, but I mean, at least to let them know.
It's kind of all part of this broader digital citizenship idea that I want to bring, not just to the kids of our community, but to the adults. I'm partnering with Janice, and in January I'll be doing a series of cybersecurity talks aimed at different audiences, so parents, seniors, business people, and also the other thing that I'm very much interested in doing in 2015 is digital citizenship for children. So kids know how to be safe online, what to look out for, and they don't have any fear, and the parents are safe knowing that the kids can actually function in their online world. So,
any board member comments? Mike?
Well, I was going to ask how you're going to publicize this. And
well, we're not sure yet. We're still, you know, like I said, beta testing, and we're having some difficulty landing on just the right laptop at just the right price point. So we're experimenting with that in library IT. I think probably, you know, as soon as programming has a moment and to come up for air and we can successfully put it out.
When we know we're going to start.
Yeah.
Let me just throw a quick softball out there because budget time will be rolling around soon.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're going to have a wish list to give to the library director, very present or future, because you keep on coming out with these knock it out of the park ideas.
Right.
So we want to see more of them.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, I don't know where you came from, but I love you. And I do know where you came from. That's another story. And third, my two twin granddaughters have been playing Minecraft. They're 8 years old.
Yep.
Against each other in the same room.
Yep.
And I was worried until just now.
That's awesome. That's what we want. That's great.
Any other comments? Councilmember Matthews?
Just apart from the Minecraft part of it, you mentioned these classes you wanted to do on digital citizenship.
Yes.
That's where I see so many opportunities for co-sponsoring with schools, with PTAs,
mm-hmm.
with, you know, getting stuff in the Parks and Rec catalogs,
mm-hmm.
and, I mean, city and county and
whatever. I'm partnering with Common Sense Media on the digital citizenship part, and for the talks that I'm doing in January, I'm using materials provided by the federal government, because October is National Cybersecurity Awareness Month.
But I think to put that in accessible layperson's language,
and the nice thing about these talks is that they're going to be geared to certain audiences.
Mm-hmm.
Too, and that's the one thing that we're going to promote is that for specific audiences, for parents, and to come to this and see what you kind of people want to think about. For seniors, what's accessible to you, what you need to think.
And also, I mean, relative to Michael's comment about what do you need, I can see something like this being pitched to a Santa Cruz Tech meetup,
yeah.
and them just throwing money at you.
I'm
quite serious.
Yeah.
I mean, this would excite them.
Yeah.
Half of them have young families.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the potential there is
enormous.
So get out to.
The other piece that I'm working on is 3D printing, because what's really cool is when the kids go in and into creative play, they build their own world. We can do stuff like take it into a school, and they can build a model of their school, and then 3D print it. So the classroom can actually print up this model of the school that they've created together. And it just brings it to life for everybody. This is the way technology is moving. So we want to make sure that we can give that to our children.
Just as a final comment, I know Dave Britton, the owner of Maker's Factory, he's presented a few times about doing just these.
Yeah.
So I'm really happy that we're kind of moving forward and kind
of
implementing some of the suggestions he's brought up.
They're really great.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, it comes down to staff resources.
How
much we can do.
Even there, I asked Teresa offline earlier about the homework help. The county office discontinued the funding for that, so you probably read in your notes Morgan Stanley picked it up. Well, you know, if there's a need for other part-time help to help with this, that's something that I bet you could find a sponsorship.
I think so too. Morgan Stanley picked up part of it, and then the library this year is supporting the rest of it. But I think we could find more sponsors, not just for that, but as you suggest.
No, but for this stuff,
like
that's
this.
Just money staring you in the face.
Yeah.
Seriously.
combination of years.
So thank you very much
thank
for
you.
The presentation. If there's no other comments, we'll go on to the next item. The report on a closed session, and I'll just say that we provided direction to council, and no reportable action was taken at the time. So the next item on the agenda is our consent agenda.
I just want to make one comment on consent on
sure.
the monthly performance measures on page 22. This is kind of, we're easing into using a new software to put our statistics together, and when this was done, and we just started getting money out of the kiosk, so it didn't seem odd to me that 500, it seemed okay, well, we didn't get going very fast, but it turns out we have a revised version of this of that page, and we took in $2,886 at the kiosk in the first month, and that was not deployed everywhere. That was a partial month. In October, it's over 6,000. And 85% was paid at the desk, but 15%, just in the partial month of September, 15% of our fines were collected at the kiosks. So thank you again.
Yeah. Okay, generally for the consent agenda item, we approve these all in one motion. Unless a board member wants to pull an item, we'll have a discussion and take it individually. Is there any member of the library board that wants to pull a consent agenda item?
I just want to abstain on A.
Is there any member of the public that like to speak or have an agenda item pulled? Okay, we'll bring it back. Is there a motion?
Move consent.
Move back up. Okay. Motion by Councilmember Matthews, second by Mayor Reed, with Supervisor Friend abstaining on item A. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. It passes unanimously with Supervisor Friend abstention on A. Okay, the next item on the agenda is a staff recognition. Teresa?
I think the only person who's here is Hannah Tiff, who was our AmeriCorps volunteer and is now our assistant volunteer coordinator. So on behalf of everybody else who was on it,
welcome.
So
that's it.
We'll move on to the Friends of the Santa Cruz Library report.
Hi, I'm Cornelia, so I'm with the Friends of the Library. So in October, we started an Aptos chapter for the Aptos Library, and it is off to a rip-roaring start. So they already now have vice president, president, secretary, treasurer. There are a couple experienced fundraisers in that group, and they've set up monthly meetings, and they are ready to go. We also held fundraisers at the Woodstocks in conjunction with the Santa Cruz Chamber of Commerce, and then at Shadowbrook, and I saw a lot of library staff there, so thank you very much. This is now one of our busiest months, followed by our second busiest month, so here we go. This Friday and Saturday, please come to our book sale, which I know everyone's a member, so I'll see you on Friday. As you know, we filled the Civic Auditorium with thousands and thousands of books. Two-day sale. Our biggest fundraiser of the year. Then after that, on Tuesday, November 25th, we are hosting Gary, and I'm going to say his name wrong, Bodwin. He is the author of a book called The Unbroken Web, which is about Navajo weaving. And he will be here again, and that's the Tuesday before Thanksgiving at 7 p.m. in this room. Then on December 6th, we are having our holiday book sale. So only 2 weeks after our fall book sale, two or three, same day as the parade. So if you're going to come to the parade, then stop by and do some holiday shopping. We're not yet sure where it's going to be, unfortunately, but it's definitely going to be in downtown Santa Cruz. It's either going to be at the formerly the vault, the Rittenhouse, or also in this room. Who knows? We're also doing lots of campaigns for the end of the year. I'm sure many of you remember our Solstice Gala. Last year we did our very first Solstice Gala, Relax at Home with a Good Book,
it is
a novel event. Lori, our king, was our author. She actually wrote the very nice ask in here. This year we have Karen Joy Fowler, who wrote it for just for us. We got her before she started winning all the awards she did for. We are all completely beside ourselves. She won the California Book Award, Ken Faulkner, and was shortlisted for the Man to, again, all of you later this week, so in your mailboxes. I also used the new, well, I had Richard Eberle use the new system Polaris to pull out frequent library card holders who are not Friends members, but who have said it's okay to share the contact information with us. And so we are sending a little over 1,300 letters to these people to try and encourage them to join the Friends and support their libraries, because clearly they are already checking out a lot of materials. And that is, you know, it for the next one.
That's a lot. That's great. Thank you, Cordelia.
Yeah.
Is there any questions? Okay, we'll go to the next item, which are the member reports. And I don't believe the Finance Committee met this time, but there was a question that came up at the last meeting to make sure that we kind of start that up again to the subcommittee, so maybe offline we could kind of...
It's scheduled to meet in February.
Okay, perfect. Okay, moving on to staff reports.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that Marcus? Marcus! There! Marcus.
Contained on your table and in the packet was the June preliminary fiscal year-end report. The handout on the packet updated the corrected some amounts in the building and facility for the month of June. It didn't change the bottom line, it's just amounts were allocated in the wrong categories. The year has ended. We're not done with our audit, so that's always the precursor. I would say we're 98% done, and I think closer to 100% for the library, so I'm not really expecting anything to change. The library's results, there's a chance the auditors might find something, but we feel pretty confident about it. The year ended in a short by $419,000 from incoming revenue versus outgoing expenditures. You might recall we started the year by carrying over prior year surpluses to fund new projects into this year, so we had anticipated having a shortfall this year. The total amount of the shortfall could have reached up to $594,000. That was the total discretionary difference between what we anticipated getting in revenue versus what we paid out in expenditures. The year did fall short, not by $594,000, it was short $419,000. So from one perspective, we weren't out of balance as we anticipated when we adopted the budget and with subsequent budget adjustments. Nonetheless, there are certain categories. Payroll came in a lot higher. Temporary staffing came in a lot higher than anticipated. And we had a lot of those one-time project costs that came over into this year. And we finished the year with an additional big cost. You might recall in June, there was an item entered into a long-term lease for copiers. And when we looked at the analysis of that, we determined that the library A had cash available and on hand to purchase the copiers, and B saved the system $16,000. Should have remembered that number more closely over the life of that by purchasing up front. So the board made the choice to fund it up front. But that moved all those costs into the month of June, $116,000. So that was also a big item that came into the month of June that helped increase that deficit position for the total year end.
Any questions?
To be clear, how do we make up this 419 or 420? Since July, then we had a plus 39,000. How did this? Explained it, but I didn't understand it.
And it's worth repeating. When we started the year, we started the year in a budgetary deficit. We looked at how much revenue we anticipated getting in, and the expenditures that we wanted to spend in this current year, and there was a gap. It started initially about $324,000 was the initial budgetary gap. And what was determined by the board is to identify prior year surpluses to move that into the current year to be a funding source for projects that we still wanted to do. So in essence, in the prior year, there were projects that we wanted to complete but never got done. So those costs...
Did we take it from reserves then?
Yes. So those costs shifted into the current year. Yeah. So our excess cash reserves were planned use.
Went down to 390.
Councilmember Termini?
Did we not also increase our reserves during this year by recommendation from the Finance Subcommittee? And does that play at all into the deficit showing?
No, we increased reserves. We've met our reserves.
I know, but we increased our reserves at some point this year, increased the mark that we wanted to hit.
Prior to coming into this year, last June, we set the target for where we want reserves. And we've maintained that target. So no, we didn't.
Right.
We didn't.
But over last year, we did increase reserves this year over last
year. Yes.
And did that in any way, does that in any way affect
no.
net gain or loss?
No.
Okay.
Any other board questions or comments? Any member of the public who would like to speak on this item? See none. I mean, there's no action required, but so.
Thank you. And you'll get a more comprehensive, the final report as part of our annual audit statement that will probably come out in December if you're getting on time.
Okay, see no other business. We're going to go right to written communications, and that's just generally an overview of comments that have been submitted by the public and also some of our reports on website. Is there any member of the board that would like to speak to any item or have any questions? They're in the packet, so you can read those. And the board meeting calendars was set earlier for 2015. Our next meeting is going to be Monday, December 8th at 6:30 p.m. at the Scotts Valley branch. There may be a closed session item, so if there is one, you'll send out some notice in advance. And see no other items. Oh, Mike.
Let the record show that at least one citizen thinks I'm the smartest person here.
That was not on the agenda.
No, it was not on the agenda.
Okay. So next meeting is in Scotts Valley. We'll hear the time. It might be revised, but see no other comments. Meeting is adjourned.